Kia ora. Welcome to Lunch Money, the audio version of the live webinar that takes questions from our investors.
Kia ora, nga mihi nui ki a koutou katoa, no mai haere mai ki tēnei hui. Welcome to another week of Lunch Money brought to you by Sharesies. And at Sharesies, our purpose is to create the most financially empowered generation.
So for those of you who are new to Lunch Money, we do these every Thursday at lunchtime, and this is a place where you, as investors, can hear from the people leading some of the companies available on the Sharesies platform and from other investing experts.
Lunch Money is also available as a podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. So please, if you're listening to the podcast, take a moment and leave a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. I would really, really appreciate that. I'm Brooke, one of the co-founders and co-CEOs here at Sharesies.
And I'm Alice. I'm a financial analyst also at Sharesies. So before we get into today's discussion, we do have a small legal disclaimer to go through. So investing involves risk. You aren't guaranteed to make money and you might lose the money you started with. Any information we provide today is general only and current at the time. And if you're looking for help with your investment choices, we recommend talking to a licensed financial advice provider. And finally, we won't be providing any personalized advice as part of this webinar.
And also a super quick reminder, if you have any questions, you can submit them through the Ask a Question button down below. And don't leave any questions in discussion area because we might miss it. We don't want to do that.
And also, please be kind and respectful towards our speakers and your fellow viewers. Otherwise, we will have to take steps to remove you from the webinar, but we don't want to have to do that.
So today we're going to be joined by Grant Webster, who is the CEO of Tourism Holdings. Tourism Holdings is the largest provider of holiday camper vans for rent and sale in Aotearoa, Australia, and also in the US, and is listed on the New Zealand Stock Exchange. Grant's here today to chat about the year that has been for Tourism Holdings and how he's continuing to navigate the business through these challenging times with COVID-19. So kia ora, haere mai, welcome Grant.
Kia ora, good to see you both and everyone on the platform.
Yeah, welcome Grant, and thank you for joining us today. Perhaps we could just kick things off by you telling us a bit more about yourself and your career.
Oh, that's I'm too old to go back too far and that'd be too boring. But look, the quick snapshot for me, I was very fortunate to start off in retail, in supermarket retail. In fact, in the same sort of era in a way as Greg Foran, the CEO of Air New Zealand. We were both at Woolworths Supermarkets at a similar time. He was a little bit higher up the ladder than me, to be fair. Spent some time in Wellington, where you're all based. Sort of followed Brooke's path, actually, I think, from Hawke's Bay down through Wellington. Spent some time there at uni and you know, a reasonable time in supermarkets. Got the opportunity to find out how you win the odds at the casino, spent some time at Sky City, and I've been with THL since back in 2005, so been here a while now.
That's awesome. And do you still keep in touch with Greg Foran at all?
Well, I hadn't for the time that he was sort of overseas, but yes, definitely now that he's back in New Zealand. Every now and then we'll trade some old supermarket stories, or we'll mention the names of someone somewhere in the world and I'll remember that name. But he's doing pretty well through tough times as well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of tough times, I guess let's get into Tourism Holdings. And perhaps, can you tell us a little bit about what Tourism Holdings does and, you know, its business, different business divisions and that?
Mm. Yeah, so Brock summed it up really nicely because one interesting thing for us being a New Zealand-based company, we are the largest commercial renter of motorhomes, or globally they're more called RVs, in the world. So, yep, we're based here in New Zealand, but we operate in Australia, in the US, and we've got a joint venture operation in the UK, and then we've got smaller franchise operations in Southern Africa and Japan. So that's sort of the motorhome rental side of things. Here in New Zealand, we do manufacture motorhomes as well. So we've got Action Manufacturing, and they do a whole lot of commercial stuff. So St. John Ambulance, we do some police units, corrections vehicles. We did a Unimog ambulance for the Defence Force. So all sorts of stuff. We export some stuff to Australia there as well. And then from our sort of heritage and heart, we've got our tourism businesses as well. So the iconic Discover Waitomo business with Waitomo Glowworm Caves, Blackwater Rafting, We've got Kiwi Experience, which a lot of people know, and then we've got some digital bits and pieces as well that we're involved with. So reasonably broad, all tourism based, and sort of that motorhome RV centric on a global basis.
Yeah, so with that, you know, reasonably broad kind of you know, work that you do, who are Tourism Holdings customers, and where are they typically based?
Yeah, so we are predominantly on the rental side servicing international customers, or I should say were, clearly. In New Zealand, we were sort of 90 plus 95% international. So that's obviously quite a change now. Australia, we were sort of 35-odd% domestic, the rest international, and US similar-ish. But the core customers, so you get that domestic active traveller. But beyond that, the international customers are predominantly European. UK is the largest market, and they're customers that, you know, really enjoy that whole opportunity to get out to the outdoors. They love that independent travel. They love the fact that they get in a vehicle once, unpack once, and that's their holiday. But on a demographic basis, it's really wide. So we get older retirees, we get a lot of families, especially out of like the Dutch market. And then you get a whole lot of you know, young professionals and young sort of backpacker type people as well. So we're right across the board, but that adventure kind of market.
Nice. Hope I'm a customer one day. I'd love to go, you know, get a camper van and go around the South Island and do that at some stage with the whānau. And so who are your competitors, and what sets Tourism Holdings apart?
Yeah, so we've got a main listed competitor in Australia called Apollo ATL. So they listed it a few years ago. So they operate in similar jurisdictions. They're not in the US, but they're in Canada. They do a little bit more retail stuff in Australia. We do a lot more retail in New Zealand. And then you've got a whole lot of sort of smaller and family-owned businesses in each different country that we operate. So those are the sort of the two main operators. But for us, what's really different, we are the scale operator. We're obviously really global. We've got that tourism base and those tourism businesses that make a difference there. Manufacturing being that core difference in terms of having commercial and motorhomes. And then because we've got sort of all that joined together in the digital elements, we sort of feel like we deliver a total customer journey that can be right from manufacturing through to sale, which is a really important part of the business as well. So we're more integrated and we're more global. And those are probably the key sort of differences.
Cool. And I mean, there's no doubt that COVID and travel restrictions have had a real unprecedented and significant impact on the tourism industry, both here in Aotearoa and across the world. So could you just tell us a little bit about how you've found these past 18 months?
Yeah, and I guess the risk is to try and do that without adding a whole lot more cliches and pivots and everything else. So it's been tough, and the toughest part has definitely been those people changes that we had to make. So there was a large number of redundancies last year as we right-sized that side of the business. We had to make a real flip from real focus on rental to real focus on sale, and that meant that we could really change our balance sheet. So we had about 220 million of debt and it's sort of at the start of COVID. We got that down to under 20. We finished the last financial year at under 49. So really focused on strengthening that balance sheet by resizing our fleet on a global basis. So could give shareholders a real confidence there. And then clearly had to focus on the other aspect of domestic tourism and doing some things differently. So we really pivoted the team, took our sales team into business development, thought about what do we have as these RVs, these motorhomes, what are they? And clearly you go, well, they're motorhomes, but you go, hang on, they're mobile, they're storage, they're water facilities, they're all these sort of different things. So we ended up being open to a whole lot of different options. So we became emergency accommodation in some places. We managed emergency accommodation for LA County in LA. We did some work for San Francisco County. We were the accommodation for the original Wuhan evacuees up in Whangaparoa. So all sorts of different things. So a real flip in terms of the markets that we were targeted on, sales of vehicles rather than rentals, and all those things sort of coming together.
I mean, you summarise it so simply, and I bet that you know, it was no easy task to pivot your business like that. And I see that you sold down some of your camper van fleet here in New Zealand, and kind of your domestic revenue increased, didn't you? Didn't it, for that first half of the year?
Absolutely. So domestics, we did a big campaign in 2020. Coming out of lockdown, we sort of went, there was a few drivers. One, we were sort of going, how do we sort of get tourism going again? We were looking at a lot more redundancy. So we said, how are we going to save some jobs and how do we get some utilization of vehicles? So we did the Get Moving campaign. That was one that some people may remember. That was sort of record prices from $29 a day. And that took off. That was amazing. So we really created a real strong domestic base out of that, a really strong database. And so we've been able to grow domestic through that kind of campaign. And replicated that to varying degrees in different markets. In the US, a lot of PR. We were on a whole lot of different key media channels up there, because the RV was seen as the COVID cocoon, they called it, in the US. So we sort of tried to maximize that kind of activity. So the marketing teams did a phenomenal job. And then obviously operationally, people really delivered. So on that, you know, we've been very fortunate, touch wood, that on a global basis, the team have done so well with their operational disciplines and processes that we haven't had one case of COVID sort of connected through the business. In New Zealand, that might not sound such a big thing, but in the US, where it's been live for the whole year, that's huge. So, you know, big shout out to our team and the way that they've managed that.
That is a great achievement. And one other thing is that, you know, at least here in New Zealand, there's been multiple support packages available to business that have been impacted by COVID, and even some for tourism. You know, what support have you received from the government, and have you received any support overseas in some of those other geographies that you're in?
Yeah, so it's been very different by country, without a doubt. The most significant sort of long-term support's actually been in the UK. So this furlough schemes, as they called it, for the crew there, meant that we could keep everyone and keep them gainfully sort of employed right through the whole period for the UK. Here in New Zealand, we have used the wage subsidy, and that has saved jobs, which is what it's about. We also had some STAP funding, Strategic Tourism Asset Protection Plan funding for Waitomo, and Kaimahi for Nature. So that's the Department of Conservation Jobs for Nature program. That is cool. And why it's cool is because we've had people that have been part-time, it's taken them up to full-time doing work between our tourism activity and on the dock estate in Waitomo. And the connection and what the team have done there is amazing. So that linking of conservation and tourism together and being able to take that sort of fixed work and variable work has been really, really something special. So I do have a real shout out to the government on that one. I think there's some real lessons moving forward for tourism out of that.
Yeah, interesting touching on conservation and then tourism. I'm really interested in what are you doing in this, you know, for tourism holdings to be a really sustainable business?
Yeah, so look, it's always a challenge what you do and how you do it. We started our sustainability journey a number of years ago, but a couple of years ago, we challenged ourselves and said, you know, are we doing the right things? Are we doing enough of the right things? And we looked globally and we found an organization out of the UK called Future Fit Business Benchmark. And in short, their vision is that a future-fit business contributes to a future-fit society. And a future-fit society is one that enables human and all other life to flourish on Earth forever by being environmentally restorative, socially just, and economically inclusive. What a just a perfect vision. But they've got 23 benchmark goals linked to the UN Sustainable Development Goals, very scientifically driven, that cover not just sustainability and GHGs and everything else, but what you're doing from a tax perspective, people and wages, what you're doing in community, all those sorts of things, and says, this is where you need to be. That's your benchmark. They have positive pursuits beyond that as well. So that system enables you to go, right, I know where we need to be now. It takes you to that vision point. Then you can backcast to today and say, well, let's do a health check. Where are we? and you develop your plans and move forward on that basis. So that's the journey we're on, to be a future fit organization and achieve those minimum benchmarks and a lot more beyond it. So if any of your listeners want to have a look at it, we highly, highly recommend it, because it's really systemic in its approach. It's ambitious in its approach. And it's not just a measurement framework, but you think about that vision, and that really influences your mindset as well. So it's been really quite sort of an inspirational point for the crew in THL. So all of that, and then I could get into a whole nother podcast about EVs and electric vehicles and where that's heading from a motorhome perspective as well. But we're into that as well.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it does seem to be the future of travel in a lot of ways. And here in Aotearoa and working in the tourism sector, and obviously you needing to work quite closely with iwi and local whenua, mana whenua, what's the approach there and incorporating, you know, Maori business philosophies into tourism holdings businesses too?
Yeah, that's a really good question and an interesting, challenging one for us as a global operation. So whilst we're New Zealand centred, we really have to improve our cultural understanding in the other markets that we're operating. So we are on a cultural journey in all markets, and we're really only just scratching the surface in Australia in particular, and have had our eyes open there. But in New Zealand, our closest connection's in Waitomo. So in Waitomo, we have a very close connection with our broader owners there, which is in part the government, the Department of Conservation, and our local hapu in there, the Ruapuha Uekaha Hapu Trust. So we work very closely with them. And the biggest change in the last wee while around COVID is we're continuing to engage deeper into the community. And we've developed with them trying to bring a more of a model around the concept of Māori, you know, that concept of life force, and really trying to understand what our impact is on all the different capitals. So we're working very closely with them on that. Did a great exhibition recently, bringing in a number of local artists to share their work, to work on site and do some promotion around that. We had a great Matariki celebration recently as well. So we're very closely linked to the community and our hapu there in Waitomo, and we learn a lot from that. It fits very closely with that broader sort of future fit mentality as well. So, but the key, as I say, is we've got to take that view on a global basis. It's not just about what we're doing in New Zealand.
Great. So, Grant, you released your full year financial results, didn't you, just the other week? So that's covering the financial year 2021 to the end of June. How would you sum up the year?
So do we just bypass the fact that it was a loss? Just to sort of move on from that. Look, the way we would sort of sum it up, and I think the analysts sort of views support this, is that, look, we protected the company. We protected shareholders. So tourism entities publicly listed around the world, but particularly in New Zealand, Australia, capital raised, and capital raised early, and that obviously shored up their balance sheets, but diluted existing shareholders. We haven't had to capital raise, and we currently have no intention to. So we managed our balance sheet with the fleet that we had. We worked very closely with our very supportive banks, being ANZ and Westpac. And so managing that, focusing the business on that alternative revenue that we talked about, on sales and those other aspects, meant that we actually did really well on that vehicle sales revenue, still ended up with an operating loss, about 14.5 million net profit after tax loss. But relative to our equity and relative to our balance sheet, that's actually pretty minor. So what we saw from our investors and what we saw from analysts is actually a re-rating of THL. So I think 4 out of 5 of the analysts moved us up a rating, and we're pretty much targeted as a buy at the moment by those main analysts, with a target price that sort of ranges between 260 and sort of 350-ish. So the summary is probably that, you know, we managed it well, minimized the loss, and created more opportunities. We gained revenue share in all the markets that we operate in, created those new opportunities. So I think the team did a really, really good job. And again, that simple point that we kept people safe as well.
That's so pleasing to hear. And I guess the next step is then, you know, facing the year ahead. And how well positioned do you think Tourism Holdings is for if the current business environment continues?
Yeah, so again, so because the balance sheet has been managed in that way, so we're in a good place. And because we've got that geographical diversity, we're also sort of protected from that perspective as well. So the US is still operating very openly and very well, and it's probably going to be the first of our countries that has international travel happening again. So that's useful. Australia domestically was actually operating very, very strongly. So that once borders open there, and, you know, their vaccination rates are getting right up there now. So, you know, they could literally be weeks away from starting to see some stuff opening. So Australia is looking good from that perspective. And, you know, we were talking before, right, about vaccination rates in New Zealand getting up there as well. So it's still probably going to be quite tough financially because we've had this degree of lockdown in this half and that flows through. But we are, again, really well positioned and gaining share in all those markets. So it's more of a, analysts sort of say, look, it's more of a win, not an if, in terms of THL and our recovery. And that's what we're focused on.
I'm really fascinated about what your views are on the outlook of tourism. I know I've got younger brothers and sisters, and they're probably wanting to do their OE at some point, you know, the overseas adventure. But is that a thing of the future? Is it exploring your own backyard more now? What do you see kind of the outlook of tourism? What is the outlook? Tell us.
So clearly nobody really knows, right? We all know that. So put that aside. You definitely have those two sort of ends of the spectrum where some people are saying, look, people are going to be scared and they're not going to travel, or they're going to travel differently and all those sorts of things. And then you've got the other end being there's pent-up demand from nearly 2 years of no international travel. We're definitely more at that pent-up demand end, A, because that's the direct feedback that we get out of our European wholesalers and what we see in markets that open a little bit. You know, the UK that's opened just recently, you know, really big August month for us. It was really big. It's a small part of the business, but really strong indicator. What could happen in the longer term trends? Yes, you could see people doing longer trips less often. That could be a trend. You could see some of the market drop away a little bit because they focus more domestically. But for us in our category, we've seen such strong category growth and interest in motorhome holidays and motorhome sales globally that we actually think we've got category share, and our category sits even more with the kind of travel that people are going to be wanting to do in the future. So we see a really positive future, actually. I think the barriers, you know, the whole, oh, do you have to do a PCR test? How many tests do you have to do? Digital passport. I really believe that that's actually just going to be something that we pass. I remember back when scanners first came in international airports, and people said, nobody's going to travel. Who's going to get themselves exposed to radiation every time? Who's going to queue up for 45 minutes to travel internationally? Just became part of the norm, right? The same thing's going to happen again.
So there'll be a new norm. So, you know, you with that future, it sounds like, you know, Aotearoa might be a destination some people will want to come to when, we do open up our bubble. So does it sound like you're going to get into, you're going to need some more motorhomes and potentially go onto EV and things like that when that demand starts picking up, or when it looks like that's a thing again?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what countries do what internationally and when they grow and what numbers they grow back to, who knows? And we definitely believe in the focus on a more regenerative focus on tourism into the future, where people are more sort of engaged with communities on a local basis and more aware of their environmental footprint. I think that's all absolutely trends that are going to come, but we will be refleeting and we will be growing our fleet. There's no doubt about that.
Awesome. And Grant, one thing I wanted to ask you more from a leadership point of view is what have been your key learnings as a business leader from the past 18 months?
Yeah, it's so hard to summarize in short, but just the incredible resilience that individuals have, without a doubt. Our people have just been amazing, and you see it in so many different businesses. So they've just, you know, one day we're going, hey, look, we're doing the biggest domestic rental campaign ever, and you've got to go from being in lockdown to being the busiest we ever have, to, hey, look, I know you were just doing that, but can you now prep all these vehicles for sale, to so many different things. So resilience, I think, from a leadership perspective, just people just being a lot more authentic. I think, you know, the corporatism stuff and corporate sort of culture, I think, moves aside. The family kind of a culture comes much more to the fore, and all the leaders, people are at home, kids are coming in, all that stuff. So I think that just infuses through a company culture a lot more that we've seen over the last year. And then beyond that, I think at a leadership, broader leadership level, there's probably a lot of people, and maybe they don't like to talk about it, but they've had a real challenge. It's been quite sort of motivating from that perspective, right? How do we get out of this? How do we manage these different situations? So I think for a lot of leaders globally, it's been really tough, but that's built that adrenaline to drive them through. From a COVID perspective, just quickly, I think relationships are really key. You find that whether you're dealing with banks, government, you know, other aspects of the industry, suppliers, that value of relationships and being able to talk to people that you've known for a number of years and just get that one more product or one more situation's been really, really key. So that's critical to always maintain.
Yeah, and you've been CEO of Tourism Holdings for 13 years now. So like, what's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself or your leadership style, I guess, through the last few years?
You just got to continue to change and develop. You've got to continue to challenge yourself. You've got to challenge yourself as to whether you're still adding the value that you think you are. You've got to be open to that feedback with the board and so forth. You've got to look at that balance of where your experience adds something and then making sure that that experience doesn't create sacred cows. So just continuing to be open about that, watch the language that you use and how you use that around that, you know, oh, we've been there before stuff. And just continue your exposure as well. So I've just, the more things being involved in the New Zealand Tourism Futures Task Force and other bits and pieces just keeps your mind expanding to regenerate that way that you look at your own business.
Thanks so much for that. We've got a few questions lined up, so I think we should get into them. So we've got the first question from Nathan. As we start looking forward to New Zealand starting to open up to tourism again, what sort of tourists do you expect will be the first head back to Aotearoa, high-end or budget conscious?
So the very first are going to be those that have a connection. So the visiting friends and relatives, and they can come across those different markets. On a global basis, I think all proportions of all those markets are going to open up. Will pricing generally in world tourism be higher? I think it possibly will for a period of time. Will that keep other people out, like backpackers out? No, not necessarily, because again, they may just be staying for longer. So people may go, actually, I'm going to take that whole year rather than 6 or 9 months. So I actually think it's going to be proportional across all markets. And not just limited to, or we're only going to see high value tourists. Don't know what those proportions are, and it'll be slightly different by country.
Yeah. I've got a question from Brent, and I'm not sure how directly you can answer it. But if you had $100,000, would you invest in Tourism Holdings? And if yes, then why are you confident to say that?
So I do invest in THL. I do have a, you're supposed to, and you'd recommend a balanced portfolio. I would be defined in your little wheel that you have as an aggressive investor, because I've got pretty much all my investment in THL. So that's just what I've done. So I would. But why? I think I'd look at the independent view, right? So look at the analysts. So we've got five different companies that cover us. As I said before, they're all saying yes. And the reason behind that, from my perspective, a key one is, so we actually have real tangible assets that are selling, right? So many companies, you're buying a brand and you're buying some revenue and with the hope that that delivers through to a profit. For us right at the moment, we'll get to that again, but you're backed by $1.73 of net tangible assets, plus we're making margin on every vehicle we sell. So you've got a floor in our sort of share price, and then you've got all the upside of international tourism opening up moving forward. So that's probably the sales pitch, if you like, on why you should invest in THL.
I love this next question from Paul. This is so great. When is the next $29 a day camper van deal for Kiwis?
When?
Yeah.
Never.
No, it was a one-off.
I think it was a once in a lifetime. Right. So that was but we're always open to a deal, and we can do friends and family stuff. We'll have to see if Sharesies fits that category.
So
that was marginally costed so that we could keep jobs and get things moving. That was the name of the campaign. But look, there are actually in winter is a really cheap time to go in New Zealand. So those were only like 20% cheaper than some of our winter rates. They were up to sort of 80, 100, 100-something percent cheaper than some of our other rates, but there'll be more deals. There's one on the moment. There's a 35% off deal at the moment if you're in level 2 area. So outside of Auckland, go for it.
That sounds super tempting.
What changes are you making or intend to make to Tourism Holdings to grow domestic business in the continued absence of overseas tourists?
Yeah, so domestic's really interesting by different country, and it is different price elasticity as well. And one of the simple reasons for that in New Zealand is that most of us own a car, right? So you look at car motel or car hotel or car holiday park versus you've got both sort of combined in a motorhome. So your substitutability cost is different domestically. When you look at Australia and US and so forth, it's a bit different because you've got large interstate, so you tend to travel. So you've got to look at that pricing and understand what you need to keep doing from that perspective. We've built a really big database, so we're just getting that repeat customer. And then beyond that, we've got a few other bits that we've added to the business. So we've got a retail business now selling motorhome and RV and camping accessories. That's grown by over 50% in the last 12 months. Our online business there has grown well over 100%. So building those out and using our infrastructure for the likes of servicing and workshop, which has always been focused on our rentals business. So we've opened that up to the public as well. I mean, you know, there are, you know, north of 20,000 motorhomes that are privately owned in New Zealand. So we can be a connection point for all of those and similar things on a global basis.
Michael asks, are you predicting a difficult summer given that they will be solely reliant on the domestic market again this year?
Yeah, so that's New Zealand centric. Yeah. So you would have to say that it's going to be very similar to last summer without a doubt. For us, we've got our fleet size much more closely aligned with that kind of demand. So we're in a much better position from that perspective, and the market is in general. I think people have got a better understanding of what our category is about. That promotion we did had a large number of first-timers, and of those first-timers, I think 85% of them said they wanted to do it again in a short period of time, and about 40% said they were interested in looking at buying one. So we're hoping to see some of that repeat visitation and the two of you and motorhome holidays in South as well.
Sounds dreamy. What is your company plan to keep your company sustainable until the border reopens next year?
Yeah. So again, just that reminder, because we're global, we're getting good profit out of the US. Australia does look like on that vaccination basis that it's going to be open earlier, and that's had really strong domestic demand, so that'll drive us as well. And then New Zealand will be tougher, but we've got that balance sheet strength that we can sustain losses for quite some time if that's where we were, but we can certainly drive out of those other markets and get as much as we can out of New Zealand along the way.
Is your management team involved in decisions with government policymakers regarding the reopening of borders and, you know, what herd mentality means for this industry? Herd immunity, sorry.
Tourism has been accused of having some herd mentality on some things, that's for sure. The short answer is no, we're not that closely involved with what's going to happen with borders. We're well aware of sort of some of the work that's happening. There's really good connection and work between the airports and the government border agencies. They're working together really closely. And I know that the plans are developing exceptionally well. That health and political decision on exactly when, we won't have any influence on that, and shouldn't. It should absolutely be up to those people that have got that broader understanding and awareness. But the system will be ready, and good work's happening in that space.
Great. We've had a few questions about vaccine passports. Do you recommend vaccine passports? If so, in what form? How will overseas tourists comply with that?
Yep. So again, there's an international body, IATA, so that sort of connects all the airlines together. So there's a lot of work happening there. I believe, don't quote me, I believe that Air New Zealand is working very closely with IATA on that. And I know that government agencies on a global basis are working on that to understand exactly what, you know, the right process is globally. The reality, when you look at what's happening in UK and Europe, is that has become quite seamless. So again, just this week, talking to some of the crew up there one night, they're just going, look, it's just, you know, I've got the app, went to Italy, that's my passport, there it is, vaccine done, way I go. So that is what's going to happen on a global basis, just exactly what technology it is, yet to see.
Bronwyn's asked here, what are you doing about the operational costs in relation to the New Zealand arm of your business, noting, you know, the loss this financial year? And also asked a bit about your salary too, given, you know, that loss.
Yep. So on an operational basis, so we did have that labour change last year where we made a number of redundancies. We've reduced the fleet, which brings down a lot of the operating costs. Our variable operating costs are moving very, very effectively. So they're coming down and up with volume very effectively. So we're very pleased with all those sorts of changes. Clearly, we continue to look at sort of core operating costs, but you can't cut too deeply, otherwise you haven't got a business moving forward. Myself, through the core period last year, we did a period where all the executive really sort of stood up and took a 30-35% pay cut. I took a 50% pay cut. The board did the same and took a 50% pay cut. We've clearly frozen base salary movements across exec and myself. We obviously in FY20 just cut all sort of short-term incentives and so forth as well. And we've got a share-based, so non-cash-based kind of retention program in for executives now. So making sure that we're saving that cash cost for the business at the same time as giving people that sort of connection to a future sort of outcome from a bonus kind of a perspective or retention perspective.
Awesome. And I think we've got time for one last question here. So what is the effect of the negative PE ratio on your business and share price?
Yeah. So you're right, because we're in loss, PE ratio is just not the right metric. It's just as simple as that. It's not the one to look at. So the couple of key things, I think, when you look at THL, I said it before, but that net tangible asset value. So you know that you've got hard assets that are backing the share price. So that's the first thing to look at, and how much above that. Then you're just making your own assumptions on recovery and borders opening and those sorts of things, and looking at it, that by market. So that is definitely the way that analysts, and it's definitely the way that the core sort of institutional investors are talking to us about THL. We are seeing inherently the Australian institutional investors much more focused on that future than New Zealand instos. New Zealand instos tend to seem to be going, yeah, we definitely know that it's when, not if, but we'll just wait a little bit longer. And Aussies are going, we know it's going to happen, so we're in now.
Cool. There's quite a few questions still there, but I know we're going to run out of time. And a lot of people are really interested in the future of tourism, which I think you've answered through this, which is good. So thank you so much for coming, Grant, and joining us. It's been really informative, and it's great to deep dive and learn a bit more about tourism holdings in the future there. And thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in too. We really, really appreciate you coming along and hearing more about tourism holdings.
I just say thank you to the two of you for hosting. Thanks, Brock and Alice. And thank you for what you're doing with Sharesies. I think you are educating well, you're bringing in new markets and really creating that opportunity exactly as per your vision. So well done.
Thank you. And yeah, thanks, Grant, for your time today. So for people who are listening, please check out also our new daily financial news podcast called Recap. It's about 10 minutes long and is published at 5 p.m. Monday to Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
And next week, next Thursday, we'll be joined by Mary Holm. Mary is a columnist, author, and commentator on all things investing in personal finance. And so we'll be talking a bit about how to plan for uncertainty and discuss some ways to put together an investment portfolio.
And we'll also be running a longer than usual Q&A session in that Lunch Money webinars, as we're sure that you'll have plenty of questions for Mary. And you can register through the link in the chat.
Yeah, so we'll see you next Thursday. Next week is Te Wiki o Te Reo. So let's, you know, join together and use more Te Reo from next week and beyond. And yeah, enjoy the rest of your week and stay safe. Ka kite anō.
For more info, visit www.sharesies.nz or find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Ka kite anō. Take care and happy investing.